Blog Talk Radio.
All right, guys, it's Tuesday night. That means we're here for PWT Talks NXT. I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which you can find out for tonight on pwtorch.com if you'd like to find out what I thought of the show. Granted, that's what we're here to do, is talk about the show and what we thought about it. And here to do that with me is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, Nate. Hey, callers, emailers, listeners. Just a quick heads up. If you go to the Torch website, the last three or the three most recent stories on there, all about NXT, the preview by assistant editor Zach Haydorn, my live report from tonight, and Nate's hit and misses from tonight all have the 2.0 removed. So
would you say maybe it's a takeover of pwtorch.com?
Go home, Nate. So
I am home.
Well, you know what I mean. So, So, yes, the 2.0 is gone, though I think what is interesting, and you'll see it in Nate's image for his hits and misses, is that while the new logo is displayed, they actually had the logo over top of the splatter in the background. So it almost looks like they just kind of photoshopped the old logo on, or the new logo onto the old background and left it at that. Before we get to the cars real quick, we'll just, there was still a lot of the splatter iconography throughout the show tonight, both in the building and through the graphics. So, people who were, again, we were saying it would be mostly aesthetic, and they didn't even go that far tonight. So maybe it's going to be a much slower rollout than we anticipated last week.
Yeah, the only aesthetic change that I really noticed in the arena was the fact that the NXT logo that they have up in the, like, up was outlined in yellow, and which I thought was actually a weird contrast to the blue ropes and stuff.
Had a little bit of purple on the inside, too.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I don't know. Like the new arena's kind of grown on me, but I was kind of hoping to see a little bit more black and gold. Maybe we'll see it next week, you know, where this was a taped show. But I don't know, after seeing this tonight with the new logo and everything, I'm kind of like, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe not.
It was taped. No wonder the pace felt so fast tonight.
Yeah, they had some time to do some editing. All right, so normally we'll get right into the main event. However, we've got a whole bunch of people that want to talk tonight. So with that, let's just jump right into the caller portion of the show, and we're going to start with area code 410. I think this is Kyle, but go ahead and state your name and what you think of the show.
No, it's Reverend Keith from Baltimore.
That's who I thought
it
was.
Oh, okay. My bad. What's going on, Keith? How are you?
And see, Nate, I have a bone to pick with you anyway, because I heard you say a couple weeks ago on a podcast that Sean was your favorite caller. So I'm only talking to Doc Bruce tonight. Sorry.
Did I really? I don't remember saying that. But
yes,
okay. I'll, hey, if I said it, I said it. I'll go with it.
Kelly was here. You deserve it.
Yes. But you know what? If I have to be second fiddle, if I'm going to be second fiddle to anyone, it's got to be to Plickton Rooney. Because he's a big supporter of mine on Twitter. So, hey, I love Sean just like you do.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So, good Reverend, what did you think of the show tonight? What do you got for us?
Yeah, it was an interesting transition from the 2.0 era. And I'm going to be honest with you. I like the gold and white logo. I hope they keep that. The symbol is very attractive and it's more appealing. I just hope that they dim the lights a little because it's still too bright and it's symbolic of the 2.0 era, you know, those lights that they have in the arena. The show I thought was interesting. There were some good matches. Of course, J.D. McDonough, the former Jordan Devlin, and Tyler Bate cannot have a bad match. I mean, I've seen them wrestle before. I thought this match was a banger. As Bron Breakker said at the commentary
over
table.
Over and over again tonight.
yes. They need to teach him some more words to use because he kept repeating himself. You're right, Doc Bruce.
He's
and I was
a signer,
like,
yes, Reverend. He can't remember all those words.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Yes. So, but I thought they put on a banger. You know, it's interesting to see somebody try to use a if you call it an airplane spin into a standing shooting star press to a pinning combination. I haven't seen that since the 1980s, but I give Tyler big credit. It was a transitional sequence there, but I thought the two Spanish flies, especially the one that led to the finish at the end, I thought they were spectacular. What were your thoughts of the overall presentation of Bate versus McDonough?
personally, this was my match of the night. I absolutely loved this match. I like the fact that there are two NXT UK guys that are main eventing, well, former NXT UK guys, because it's no longer a thing, but that are main eventing NXT US. I just thought that was cool in and of itself. But the fact that it was Tyler Bate and JBD McDonough, as you said, Keith, they can't have a bad match. this was like fast-paced, high-octane match all the way. I don't know where I came up with the high-octane thing lately. That's been like my thing the last couple of weeks, but you know, whatever, I'll grow out of it. Really just an incredible match. I think JD McDonough was probably the right choice here to go over, although I really wanted to see Bate win, but I think it was the right choice to go over, you know, because now we can do a heel face dynamic. We also saw Ilya Dragunov make his way back to NXT after having to vacate the NXT UK title, which Tyler Bate won before NXT UK was you know, kind of disbanded. But Ilya Dragunov's been out due to injury for quite some time now, so we saw him return tonight and kind of also lay claim to the NXT title, maybe. It seems like we might be in store for like a triple threat between Dragunov, McDonough, and Breaker. So we'll kind of see where that plays out, especially over the course of the next couple weeks. But that's also super intriguing to me too. Ilya Dragunov is incredible, and I think getting all three of those guys in the ring for a triple threat could be phenomenal. And I'm not usually one in favor of a triple threat match. But overall, like I said, I think this was my match of the night. Like you said, those two Spanish flies are absolutely incredible. The one that got the pinning combination, I think, was like the cooler one. But then at the same time, where he caught Tyler Bate when Tyler kind of, what does that, like, neck slingshot off the top rope? I don't know what to really call it. But when he caught him there with that Spanish fly, that was just like, that was insane. I didn't even know what happened. I had to go back and rewind it because it just happened so fast. So, like, absolutely phenomenal match. I liked the presentation. And like I said, I think the right person came out victorious tonight. Bruce, what did you think of the main event?
Yeah, basically when I wrote my report, you know, you just don't expect these two to have a bad match. This is also – so I said there were three main things, I think. Hold on real quick.
Holding.
So I said that there were three main things tonight that really make it seem that have some callbacks to Black and Gold. And one would be the main event. And so that main event that we watched is going to be sort of the template of what I think we should expect from NXT main events going forward, which was what we saw a lot during Black and Gold. And the other two things were the announcement of the North American Championship ladder match, which was how the title was introduced to the promotion, or the brand, I guess I should say, and then Dragunov, because of how integral he was to UK when it was still really connected to Black and Gold in a certain way, especially in terms of style and presentation. So I think that the main event was indicative of trying to placate some of the fans who think that Black and Gold is coming back right away, but also ensuring that it's within the storylines and the feud that have been built within NXT 2.0 the past few months. Both of these two men have been the last two challengers for Bron Breakker's NXT Championship. McDonough first, and then Bate most recently at World Collide. And I think the finish here is predictable, just because unless circumstances are unavoidable, like Bate being NXT UK champion at the time they decided to shut it down, WWE doesn't like doing face versus face matches that much for championship matches. So I think that was expected. Here is also a good way to give Breakker another definitive win over McDonough. Or if you go with a surprise, you could have McDonough go over. But then again, Dragunov coming out makes it just in like a triple threat match, as you alluded to. And I'm not, so I'd rather see a singles match or a singles feud between Dragunov and Breakker. I just don't want to have to listen to both of them on the mic, because they both kind of have the similar disposition, I guess. They're very intense and furious. So a triple threat match should be fine with them. It'll probably be very fast paced. It'll probably be a pain in the ass to cover and report on, but it'll be fun. I just think that they're relying a bit too much because on triple threat matches, because we just had one for the women's championship at Worlds Collide as well. And you also have another multi-person match with the North American Championship match. Then we had the four-team elimination tag team championship match. So there's just all these different sort of multi-people matches they're getting at to try and fit everyone into feuds, which at one point NXT didn't have enough talent to do this, and now they're trying to fit too much in at one time. So we've gone from one end to the other, and there hasn't been a nice balance found yet. The Spanish Fly is so they were both nice, but I think the first one was more impressive to me because it came off the rebound lariat that Tyler Bate does so often, and it was so smooth and done in motion. There was no pause. There was no break. You know, earlier in the night when you watched Sangha versus Von Wagner, for example, you could definitely see where they were trying to set up for their things. But this one, it was so fluid that it looked like it was choreographed in the best way possible. Like, it was just McDonough using the momentum of his opponent to his advantage. And to me, that one was more impressive because of that and how quickly he snapped it off. The Avalanche one is always impressive because of how high you can get, but being able to do it just on the mat and taking your opponent straight to the mat by flipping them like that, I think is pretty damn impressive. And I know you also have to rely on your opponent to flip with you, so kudos to both men on that one. And, yeah, I think I would have been more excited had Dragunov made his return after the end of the McDonough Breaker championship match. But that's not happening anymore, so I guess we'll just see where this goes and probably a triple threat at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. And I mean, there is 6 weeks away, I think, the Halloween Havoc. So, I mean, there might be something that goes on where – you know, we even maybe get a match or something before that, but I have a feeling this is all going to culminate in 6 weeks, Halloween Havoc.
Well, I also think that you can't have McDonough go on another number one contenders match after he just won one, you know? So it's...
Yeah.
They kind of booked themselves into a little corner here, so they're going to have to find a way to extend it out 6 weeks or have it earlier and then have the singles match at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, something like that, for sure, for sure. Keith, any follow-up or what's the next talking point?
Well, I like the fact that Dragunov is now in NXT. He's a superior talent, and they will definitely have some fun booking him. I mean, there's so many incredible matchups he could have, you know, so I look forward to seeing Dragunov in the title hunt. I don't think it'll take him long to get there. He staked his claim tonight. As you said, Doc Bruce, it'll probably end up being a triple threat between he, McDonough, and Breaker. I'm sure McDonough will eat the pin if that's the case. Let's see if they can drag it out 6 weeks. Let's shift gears now to the women's title picture. Now, I like the fact that Alba Fire staked her claim last week on NXT with Mandy Rose. Now, they have a ton of women that's vying for title contention. And actually, the match with Cora Jade versus Wendy Chu tonight did not disappoint. Wendy Chu is really showing her wrestling skills more and more. Even though she has a playful gimmick, she can really go. And I thought this was a formidable win for Cora Jade. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I think it was definitely a big, a pretty decent win for Cora Jade. The match itself, I have to give them both credit. Like, I think it was a pretty good match for both of them. Wendy Chu, obviously being, you know, more of the veteran in the ring right now. I really like her as the wrestler. I don't like the Wendy Chu gimmick, which I've mentioned before. I've mentioned, you know, both here and on, in my hits and misses column, the gimmick is just, I don't know, it's just not believable for me. And it's not like, I don't know, it's not a gimmick that should be pushed the way that it was pushed, especially to even garner a women's title match like she did, you know, a couple few months ago. But in terms of this match, you know, I thought it was pretty decent overall match. You know, Cora Jade, she's also somebody that I want to like, and I want to get behind, but I'm having some hard time doing it. I was starting to get behind her more after the heel turn, actually big time. I was getting behind her after the heel turn. And lately she's really just come off to me as like a petulant 13-year-old bully. And I don't know. I don't really like that direction. I feel like she can certainly play a good heel, And I feel like her heel character is light years ahead of her face character. But just there's still something there, and I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. But you know, I don't know if it's her acting ability or what, but she just, to me, comes across like a 13-year-old bully. And it doesn't really work for me as like the top or a top heel in the female division. So I don't know. So like this match for me, like it was in a way hard for me to get into because as I wrote in the hits and misses, these are basically two gimmicks that I really don't care about. But to their credit, they went out and they actually put on a pretty entertaining match. So I got to give them that. With Cora Jade, I hope that we see her kind of getting away from the Roxanne Perez stuff a bit more. I was actually kind of surprised Perez didn't come out and attack her tonight after she attacked Perez last week. But we saw Lash Legend come out with the attack anyway on Wendy Chu, kind of furthering their feud. So yeah, you know, overall there was a lot going on here, some good, some not so good. But I definitely gave this one a, you know, kind of like a lukewarm hit in the hits and misses. Cause you know, it wasn't necessarily a bad match or anything like that. I'm just, like I said, I'm not really behind these two competitors. So, Bruce on, Wendy Chu and Cora Jade.
So I would disagree on match quality a bit. I don't think it was bad, but I don't think it was standout. Like there was nothing in the match that stood out to me except the ending, because it seemed like the ending was botched. And other than that, you know, the match to me, it was there. It was fine. I don't think it's going to be on any woman's highlight reel.
I wasn't trying to imply that either. Yeah, it was a decent match, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
Yeah. Chu has better attire now. She's not coming out in onesies, at least. She's coming out more in like what you kind of see women's wrestlers wear at times, only the design is still a bit pajammy, so there's that. I did like her stink face that she gave to Cora Jade before the match started, but that was good. But yeah, Cora Jade, you can still see that there are parts during her matches where she's still trying to figure out the timing and remember the spot. And that showed a bit here. And, you know, that's to be expected. But I don't think she's shown as much growth as people hoped for her when, you know, she first debuted and she had the whole babyface gimmick going on, even though she was acting like a heel, you know, stealing titles and whatnot. But for Cora Jade, this is a big win because regardless of how Wendy Chu's character has been pushed, she's basically been used as the person to set up the next woman for whatever feud they're going to be in. So, you know, she lost to Tiffany Stratton. I think she lost to who am I forgetting? But then now she loses here to Cora Jade. And, you know, going back to the vignette, the video with Roxanne Perez and Mikel Satomura, they brought her up and they showed her hitting Perez, and I was fully expecting to hear from Cora Jade during that video, but they focused on Perez and they focused on Satomura. And I think because they had Lash Legend coming out to attack Chu, they didn't have anything to do with Perez and Jade, so there's probably got to be something for next week. But it is a bit odd that she's still being brought up. And it makes sense because she attacked last week, but that there's no follow-up this week besides the video. And the video is good, don't get me wrong, but we didn't hear from Jade, and I think that was the one missing piece here, because she was basically called out in that video by both of the women, and she just got a victory, and we didn't hear from her. And I think that was the one area that I think had that happened, I would have been much higher on this whole match, everything to do with Cora Jade and Wendy Chu, and yeah, so not the best match, not the worst match, just there. And then yeah, the ending, it looked like Cora Jade was supposed to pull off the middle turnbuckle, and it just got a little loose. And you know, a little loose turnbuckle isn't going to knock Wendy Chu out enough to land a DDT and then score the victory. So I think that also took away from it for me.
Fair enough. Keith, any follow-up on that, or do you have another talking point? I'll give you one more if you've got it, because we do have two more people on the line.
Yes, certainly. I think the female whom Doc Bruce was referencing was Tiffany Stratton, because Wendy Chu went 1-1 in her matches against Stratton, if I recall. Now, moving on with
Stratton won the last one, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think she did.
Yes, and that's who you were referencing. Yes, so we all are correct here. My third and final point of the evening pertains to the A champion, Carmelo Hayes. Now, I find it odd that he and Trick did the job to chase you tonight. Now, you could look at that one of two ways. Maybe they want to humble him or get him ignited in another feud. Or could we perhaps be foretelling a call-up to the main roster? Because I think it would be cool to have him follow Sokoa to SmackDown. And even Ricochet said that in a recent interview that I read moments before the show aired, that if Sokoa is a champion on SmackDown, Ricochet stated that he doesn't see why Carmelo shouldn't be a champion on either Raw or SmackDown. Now, because you guys know that Hayes and Trick should not be losing to Andre Chase and Bobby Haywood. So do you foresee this as a potential call-up and he's doing his job on the way out? Or do you see this as perhaps them humbling Carmelo and perhaps moving him in another direction down in NXT? Once again, thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. I was honored to be able to call tonight because I had a rare Tuesday night off. You guys do a great job on Tuesday nights. And talk to you soon.
All right, Keith. Hey, man, thank you as always. We appreciate it. So I agree. I don't think that they should have lost Andre to Chase University tonight. I was kind of scratching my head a little bit on that one as well. It was kind of nice to see Chase University get a win, especially over somebody, you know, like Mello and Trick Williams. But yeah, it did seem a little bit strange to me. I don't think it's call up eminent because we have Carmelo Hayes officially in that ladder match at Halloween Havoc. So I don't think it's like a call up, you know, he's doing the favor tonight and he'll be on SmackDown or Raw, you know, next week or whatever. I could certainly see Mello, you know, maybe losing at Halloween Havoc, losing that ladder match and then going to Raw or SmackDown. I mean, I think Carmelo Hayes is probably the most polished act. And I'll put Trick Williams in there as well. I think the two of them are probably one of the most polished act, if not the most polished act in NXT. And they could go to the main roster, you know, immediately and not flounder or anything like that. I'm really impressed with Trick Williams on the mic tonight. Like, he said something like Bodie Jabroni.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh man, like he just spit that out so quick. It was fantastic. He really flowed on the mic tonight. Not that he doesn't normally, but I mean, he's really come a long way from his first time on the mic, which even his first time on the mic, I thought he was great, but he's really like, gotten comfortable with his character. And, I've got to give him a lot of credit for what he does on the mic. Cause I think he really, not that Carmelo couldn't do it on its own, but I think the hype from Williams and just everything that Williams kind of brings to the act really helps to elevate Carmelo Hayes. But yeah, I don't think it's an imminent call up. I'm not, and I don't necessarily think it was like to humble Hayes or Trick Williams either. I think there's some sort of a story there that might be building between Chase U and Mello and Williams, but I'm not quite sure what it is. It's like I said, this finish was a little bit head scratching for me as well, because Chase University, they're just further down the card than the A champion and Trick Williams. So Bruce, what do you make of all of this?
I disagree again.
Fine.
I'm going to talk a bit, though, because there's a lot involved in why. So, if you're going to have Hayes and Williams as a tag team match to Chase you, and if you're going to have Hayes take the pin from Chase, even if it's just a sneaky pin, this is the best time to do it, because not only is he still frustrated about the loss of his title, he wasn't given the title he thinks was his when Shawn Michaels stripped Solo Sikoa of it to start the show. Further, he was also given a bye into the ladder match. So, storyline perspective, all you need to do is come out next week and have Hayes said, yeah, I overlooked him because I'm the A champion. And I usually don't deal with people like, you know, I don't usually don't deal with the fodder like that, you know, put him down and just say, but you know what? I'm back focused. This is all going to be mine. And just have him start winning matches. And you could have him beat Bodie Hayward, then beat Andre Chase, and then get him ready for Halloween Havoc. It's not the same realm, but it's similar to the Hurricane beating The Rock with a roll-up on Raw in, what, 02? So there are times you can pull this off. And with Hayes being the top person on the brand, regardless of what Braun Breaker wants to say, we've been discussing this for months now, him taking a loss here also keeps the fans honest because we expect him to just go over so easily, right? And you know, I didn't look at spoilers for the tapings or whatnot. So if you had come into this and you didn't know anything, then this is a memorable moment for you to think about coming out of the shows. Whoa, Carmelo Hayes actually lost to Andre Chase. It was a tag team match, but he took the pin, and Andre Chase got that. So now, to the ladder match real quick, even though we only have two official people, because even with two official people right now, and I don't care who else is on join, I only see two outcomes for this. The first, to me, is Carmelo Hayes uses what happened tonight as a platform to reassert himself and reinvigorate himself and stay focused and add an edge to him and just take it to everybody and win that title back at Halloween Havoc. The other, to me, is Wes Lee. Now, his promo tonight, or his little video, I think while he delivered it well, it made him look like a stupid, like just a dumbass because he was given the opportunity to have a bye. But he's like, nope, I want to earn it. It's like, dude, you already earned it. They were offering you that. You really just got to take that. And you know it's bad when the heel stacks. Channing Lorenzo comes in and says, you always take the free ride. You can't, for your heel to undermine a face like that, it's just, it's not how you're supposed to be riding these things, right? So I think that was dumb. But however, I see Lee as the only other person right now, even though he hasn't qualified yet, to win this title because who has Lee been entangled with the entire time he's been back as a singles wrestler? Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. He's had matches with both of them. Williams has interfered in these matches multiple times, and they attacked him last week when he was supposed to be the one to challenge for the North American Championship. He could be the one to thwart Hayes and Williams at the ladder and then knock them off as they usually do in WWE, and he's the one to climb up and grab it and become North American champion. That could be a way to send Hayes off, or it could be a way to give Lee his first legit title defense against the former champion before sending Hayes off. So yeah, I think it's option C. I don't think it's they're humbling him. I think the Chase winning here is really just it fits the story, and it fits the storyline to me well. And I don't think that it's a call-up or an imminent call-up or even a call-up, you know, within the next few weeks or even at Halloween Havoc. So I think this is just a way for them to, because Hayes has the bye, it's a good way to give Hayes something to do in the meantime, still remaining focused on becoming North American champion. He could look at these as, you know how international soccer or football teams, they have friendlies and exhibitions before they go on to have the tournament matches or the qualifiers. He can look at what he does over the next 5 weeks as friendlies, as the prep, as the scrimmages before he goes on to the actual event at Halloween Havoc. So I also think that show or that match is probably going to open the show because traditionally these matches have opened or these types of matches have opened, you know, takeovers, pay-per-views and whatnot. So all that being said, I disagree with you and the Reverend on the finish in terms of it being questionable. I think this is the perfect time to do it if you're going to do it. It also gives Chase a notch in his belt and Chase you a notch in their belt as, you know, they're not going to move very far up. But this is, I think, you got to give them at least one or two wins here and there to make it seem like they're not always just going to lose to a certain extent. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to how they tell the story over the next 5 weeks and to who else qualifies for this North American Championship match.
All right. So with that, I am unmuted. I thought I was muted for a second. Okay. I tricked myself out and I didn't even have to. With that, let's go back to the phone lines and we'll go over to area code 615. So 615, go ahead, state your name, where you're calling from.
Nate and Bruce, this is Sean, BFP of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And Nate, I will say, first of all, Reverend Keith, you know, I will say Keith or Kelly was the one that said I was his favorite caller, and I'm proud of that. But you know, I'll take it with a grain of salt. But it's good. I'm happy for it. But Nate, it's always good to talk to you, man. Bruce, it's been a long time, man. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing very, very. I'm doing well, and I'm also constantly sweating living in Honolulu. So yeah.
You know, the humble brag. You know, just saying.
Hey, the humidity is like at 85-90% over here every day, so it's rough.
Yeah, all right. Okay, you know what? I'll take my New England weather then. And you know what,
say, Bruce,
Sean, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go. I had a weird thought, so go with what you were saying.
All I was going to say was I'm glad that you said that it was Kelly that said that, because when Keith brought it up, I was like, I mean, I like talking to Sean, don't get me wrong, but I have no recollection of saying that whatsoever. So, okay, cool. I feel a little bit better about that.
That's funny. No, I was going to say, Bruce, I will say it's pretty humid here where I'm at. It's like, it feels like 100 today and it will be again tomorrow, but thank goodness this weekend it'll finally cool off and be more like normal kind of fall, getting close to fall weather. But it is pretty warm here, too, so I feel your pain there. But I just got back in town from Iowa. I actually went to Iowa for a few days, and it felt really nice there. I was like, I wish I could have that weather all the time. That would be amazing. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I wanted to say the show was pretty good tonight, but I want to go back to real quick a little bit about Wendy Chu and Cora Jade. I'm with you, you know, you guys, as far as I think Wendy Chu is so freaking talented, and yeah, the gimmick is just bad. I talked to Greg. Did I bring it up with you, Nate? Were you on with Greg when I brought that up about how I can't stand Wendy Chu's character and it's just awful? Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
Yep.
I don't like that at all. But she's so good, and I think they can do some stuff with her, and I'm curious to see where they go. But I did think the match was good. I'm with both of you guys as far as it definitely was not a great match, but I thought it was, you know, pretty well worded. And I want to say about Lash. Yeah, yeah. And with Lash, you know, I'm willing to give Lash time because she is still very new and very, very, very green. I watched her play in Mississippi State in women's basketball, and she was a great basketball player. But, I mean, she's got a long way to go. That kick, I mean, I know she's got – well, number one, she's got the heels on, which it's going to be hard to kick with heels anyway. And then the kick was had so much light. I mean, what did you guys think about was that one of the worst kicks? I
blame Chu on that when she bumped early.
Okay. Yeah, that's –
I'd have to go back and see it. I'd have to go back.
She turned a bit early on the kick before it got there, and I think that's why it showed so much light.
Okay. Yeah, it was – but Lash has a long – you know, definitely a long way to go. I mean, I'm going to give her time because, again, it's still – you know, but and with her – and I think Chu can help her have a good match because Wendy is really good in the ring. And so I'm curious to see how that match would go. But going back to one of the main topics I was going to bring up because I hadn't brought it up yet, I haven't got to watch, as much of NXT as I would like. I keep up with your guys' reports, so I'm always keeping up with what's going on, but I haven't got to watch as much as I would like. But the Axiom-Nathan Frazier match, I thought, again, at the beginning of the show, I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was very hard-hitting, very, again, fast-paced because Axiom is going to fly around. But I thought a lot of the stuff was pretty crisp. So I want to hear what you guys thought about the match in general, but then kind of talk about – I don't know Nathan Frazier especially very well. I haven't heard as much about him. So I wanted you guys to talk about him and kind of his trajectory and where you think he could go and just what you guys thought about the match.
Yeah, sure. So as far as the match went, I thought this was going to be my match of the night until the main event. This was a phenomenal match as far as I'm concerned. It was a little bit different than their first match. I feel like there was a little bit more technical wrestling here, but they still kept it super entertaining. Yeah, the crowd was solidly behind the match the entire way, as far as I remember. So I really dug this. And I mean, kind of predictable. You get a best of three or a best of five or something like that.
Yep.
You know it's going to go all the way to three or five or wherever it's going to go. So I had a feeling we were going to see. Yeah, I know, right? It's like crazy, crazy, crazy talk. So you kind of knew Nathan Frazer was probably going to get the win tonight, most likely going to get the win tonight. But even knowing that, I still really, really enjoyed the match. You know, they I don't feel like they like pulled pulled any punches, but you know, they just went like full 10 out of 10, you know. They went 0 to 60 like super quick, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Nathan Frazer, I'm only familiar with his stuff in NXT, not necessarily in NXT UK. But I mean, from what I've seen so far, I think he's got a pretty decent trajectory. I don't necessarily think we'll see him at like, you know, the NXT championship level, but I could certainly see him, you know, challenging for the North American title. You know, if he wasn't doing this thing with Axiom right now, I could see him maybe even, you know, in that ladder match for the NXT North American title. But yeah, you know, overall, like I said, I think this was a great match, a little bit different than their first, which I think was a good idea to switch it up a little bit. But yeah, overall, I'm really digging this. Axiom, you know, we've seen him, you know, seen his work as a kid, and like he's just a great talent. I'm really liking this character under the hood. The entrance is still a little weird, but whatever, I'll go with it. But overall, I really like both of these characters, and I think they're I think they're probably both at like a North American title level, is at least as of what I've seen so far. Bruce.
Yeah. So. I love these two when they get in the ring. That great chemistry, great matches. I hate that I've had to cover both their matches so far. So I hope Kelly gets the third one, because they're probably going to go insanely fast in that third match. My hands were hurting after the I noted it in the Slack, like they started the night off with Axiom versus Frazer, and I still have to cover a whole other, you know, the rest of the night. I'm like, my hands are going to be sore tonight, and they definitely were, because they, even when they're doing the technical, you know, British mat wrestling stuff, like Tyler Bate, they're going so quick in their counters and their chaining that it's hard to just to list everything they do. Started out more of a more fast paced, and then after the commercial break, they came back and it was more of a methodical limb attacking pace set by Axiom. This week they reversed it and they went more of the technical stuff in the beginning and more of the hard hitting and flying stuff in the second half after the commercial. So, I think I predicted that would happen after that match 2 weeks ago, and then said that in the third match it was going to go full out, which they could extend it to Halloween Havoc, but it might just end up being a main event of TV someday. And that could also end up being one of the qualifiers for the North American Championship ladder match. So don't be surprised if that
That's
does
a good
happen.
Point. Because, I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
You know, if you're a manager, you can look at it and say, wow, you two have been performing really well. You have one on each other. The rubber match is going to determine one of the qualifying spots, because you two have done enough to be considered for that spot. You know, I more than Tony D'Angelo has done the last month and a half, that's for sure. So
yeah.
So I think that could definitely happen. It might be for the last qualifying spot as well. I wrote that even though you knew who was going to win this match, all of the dramatic moments, except for maybe one or two, went to Frazer's way. So you were still drawn into like, oh, is this going to be the finish? Oh, is this going to be the finish? Oh, no. And I think that helped because of the predictability of what was going to happen. The one main spot that stood out to me was when Axiom was setting up for his finisher, which is the leaping super kick that Wade Barrett called, what did he call it, the golden ratio. And as he leaped to do that, he got drilled by Frazer's super kick, and he just crumpled in the air. And I thought that was done so well. The timing was just perfect. It didn't show any light. It looked brutal. And the fact that he kicked out, you know, that was cool. The brainbuster, the shooting star press, the finishing Phoenix splash, that was just picture perfect. I think what we saw tonight, especially towards the end, is a preview of what the full third match is going to end up being like in terms of the moves, the pace, and just kind of the overall athleticism that will be on display. So again, hopefully Kelly is the one doing that last match whenever it happens, because it's definitely going to be a strain on the fingers. But I think right now their level is definitely going to be North American Championship. But Triple H has also shown, look at Johnny Gargano, look at Adam Cole,
yep.
he will put the main title on people who we might not look at as the main champion just because of their size. Axiom is taller, but he's also skinny. Frazer is shorter, but he's a little more stockier than Axiom. I could see both of them, if they get enough crowd reaction, they put on some strong performances, don't be surprised if they're challenging or even winning one of the main titles in NXT, or I guess the main title in NXT, and moving into Raw and SmackDown if they're immediately going into sort of a United States Intercontinental Championship level because of their performances and how much Triple H trusts them. Because I don't think they've done anything since they've been in NXT or NXT UK that – on screen, I can't speak to anything off screen. I've never heard anything bad about either of them, but at least on screen, they haven't done anything to tell me that there should be little faith in them. They just keep reinforcing my thoughts about them week in and week out. And I think it was the best stroke of luck for them to put these two in a series together, because their styles mesh so well together that I think we're seeing the peak of their potential in their matches with each other. And I think that'll come to a head in the third match. And also, if you don't know much about Nathan Frazer, he's the former Ben Carter, I believe, before he came to NXT. I think he even had a match or two in AEW as Ben Carter before he fully signed with NXT. So if you want to go back and watch some of his stuff before, then look for the name Ben Carter.
Ben Carter. All right. Good to know.
I believe.
Good to know.
Let me just check again, but as you're talking, I'll just make sure.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Sean, any follow-up, or do you have anything else for us?
Yeah, I was just going to bring up two quick things. The first was going back to the beginning when they did the thing with Solo saying he couldn't win the title because of the way he won it, which – you know, made sense, came in a, you know, a heelish way, and it didn't make it, you know, it's like, okay, Shawn Michaels, and it was good to see Shawn Michaels on the show. It really was. It was a good way to start the show. And with him to do that with Sokoa and then, you know, not just give it to Carmelo and say, hey, you got to earn it. So what did you guys think of the segment itself, how Shawn did it, and how, like, did you think a ladder match was a good idea? Like, what did you guys think of that segment and how they built to that match altogether? What did you think of that?
I think we've been predicting a ladder match for a month or two now, actually, on the show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about it. We've definitely talked about it. I really liked the segment. Honestly, the thing about Sokoa, you know, coming in for a non-sanctioned match and yada, 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 that was a little weird for me, because we've had other people come down and do the same thing and challenge for titles, but... you know, I mean, Dolph Ziggler did it, you know, and won the NXT title without talking to any authority figure. So I thought it was a little just weird and arbitrary that they did it with Solo Sikoa, but, you know, it's wrestling, so I can't think about it too hard. So, you know, it sort of made sense. It made sense because, you know, he did something he wasn't supposed to do or whatever. But it's also one of the things that I feel like you do need, at least in today's day and age, where an authority figure has been so prevalent in WWE and in wrestling in general, you have to have some sort of an authority figure. I'm not saying they need to be on screen every week. I'm not saying they need to be the ones making every single match or anything like that. But the fact that there hasn't been an authority figure in NXT 2.0 in the past year since William Regal has left, every match is an unsanctioned match, right? I mean, who's actually making these matches?
Shawn Michaels.
Well, and we've had, but I mean, even tonight, how many matches? We had at least two matches that just started from, you know, just
that
from nothing.
That pissed me off reviewing it, but that's a different
story.
Yeah.
So it's just some consistency. I would like to see a little bit more consistency if they're going to strip a title from somebody because of, you know, it was a quote unsanctioned match. Well, then, don't throw two other unsanctioned matches on the same show. That just seems weird to me. So that nitpick aside, I really liked the angle. I think it's, you know, it gives Solo Sikoa, you know, an out, so he doesn't have to be, you know, down in NXT and then running around to Raw and SmackDown too. So it gives him a bit of an out, although I would have liked to see him as a, you know, North American champion for a little bit longer. And it also helps to build to this match at Halloween Havoc. You know, as Bruce said earlier in the night, the North American title was introduced by a ladder match. I feel it's, you know, kind of fitting. Why not throw it up again in a ladder match? And with it being a five-way ladder match, I feel like it's going to be a car crash. Depends on who's going to be in it, obviously. So far, we just have Carmelo Hayes and Oro Mensah, which we'll talk about him later, I'm sure. But yeah, I think it was a good angle overall. I think building to a ladder match at Halloween Havoc is a good idea. And it's, I could even see that I could see that probably kicking the show off. I think the NXT title will probably be the main event, but I could certainly see that. Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I could certainly see it kicking the show off. You're kicking Halloween Havoc off, just with a bang. So, but now, you know, now that you've caught me stealing the things you've already said, go ahead and slap your gums, Bruce.
let me say what I didn't like about the opening segment first, and then I'll get to what I liked about it, because I think it's even or tilted more to the positive side. So what I didn't like is if it shouldn't have counted in the first place because he just appeared and wasn't a choice, then why did you let the match occur last week? You know, like the match shouldn't have happened if he wasn't supposed to be there. Then the segment itself, I think Shawn Michaels did fine. I think everyone did fine here. Solo Sikoa, it's interesting when you look at the Bloodline, they break the rules, but it's one of those they'll only admit to it if they get caught. So Solo here saying, all right, the rules are the rules, is him being acknowledging that he got caught breaking the rules, right? Because the Bloodline, they don't care about the rules, but it's only when they get caught. Right. So I like that bit of consistency here, because we talked before, especially during Worlds Collide build up, how there wasn't any character consistency in those who came from Raw SmackDown to encourage those on NXT or NXT UK. And it made sense to a certain extent, but also didn't when you think about the, for lack of a better term, the WWE universe as a whole. And Hayes, I think, was perfect in his indignant attitude towards Sikoa, and then turning that on Michaels for not awarding him the title immediately. Although I do think it was smart to have him get the bye because he was the former champion. We talked last week about how Hayes has outs in terms of losing, because it wasn't one of the three people that he was preparing for, and it was someone who wasn't even on the roster, because they had been the Saturday before that, they basically signal that they're going to be on SmackDown now when they interfered at Clash at the Castle. So I think that all works in Hayes' favor. It goes back to what I said earlier about him taking the loss to Andre Chase. I think it all works in the storyline here. So there's that. Those are the things I didn't like about it. Oh, and the other thing I didn't like about it, too many damn camera cuts, even for a pre-recorded segment. They just kept going back and forth and back and forth. It's okay to leave your shot on people and let them work. Let us understand and try and have them convey their emotions and their messages to us through their acting, instead of you constantly cutting back and forth between the same damn spot, the same person saying this thing, saying their same lines. Like it's the same. They cut the cameras over and over again while the person is saying one line, and it just is too much. Even for a pre-recorded segment, they're doing this, and so that bugged me. I think the best thing to come out of this is it gives a legitimate reason to have the multi-person ladder match. And it's, in a sense, at least how it seems like they're booking these matches, almost like a mini breakout tournament, because you have Oro Mensah tonight coming. You have Wesley, who was there before, but basically coming in and taking on D'Angelo, who, you know, another one. And depending on how they do the rest of the matches, it looks like it's a lot of the talent who they have a lot of hopes for in the future. So I think that's what's good that came out of it. They also, I think, accomplished their goal by having Sikoa defend the title last Friday on SmackDown. Like with Kevin Owens being there with John Cena, they got one of the NXT titles on a main show. And right now, SmackDown is the main show in WWE. When you look at the viewers, when you look at the ratings, and when you look at the star power, mostly by Roman Reigns, of course. I know Mandy Rose has been, or Toxic Attraction showed up, and I think they had the tag titles with them at the first time they did, but I think they accomplished their goals last with what they had set out last week with Sokoa winning. And while I also agree I would have liked to see him have it longer because I advocated that he full double duty so he could work on the basics a little more, the fundamentals while down at NXT, this also works because his presence alone is enough to be on the main roster, to be on SmackDown, without any more need for the reps in NXT because I'm sure he's going to get those reps along with the Bloodline while he's traveling with them to and from shows.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, for sure. Sean, any follow-up, or I'll give you one more. We do have another caller on the line.
I was just going to say, yeah, whether it's Brad or Ryan, man, I apologize. I'll get to you. It's been so long. I've called onto the show. It's just been crazy. I just feel like I got to get too much in here. It's awesome. It's great. The last thing I wanted to ask you guys was going back to Oro Mensah, because, I haven't got to watch. I haven't seen him at all. I don't know, you know, much about him. But the match with Grayson, the match was, okay. But, again, the end, I haven't seen Apollo since he's been in NXT a lot. So, like, when he came out, it was like, whoa, that's weird. And all of a sudden, there's blood from his eyes. Like, whoa, that's really odd. It threw me off. It took me out of it a little bit. So I want to hear what you guys thought about the match, which I thought was fine. The finish was weird because I don't know enough to really know what they were trying to do there. I know Grayson and Apollo, you know, fought a few weeks ago, but I don't know much about what's been going on between them. But and kind of going back to how much time, you know, do you think Grayson's going to be in NXT still for a while, or do you think he's going to go, you know, because I thought he'd go to the main roster sooner rather than later, and he's been there for a while. And so I'm curious what you thought of the match, where you think Grayson's going, and kind of talking a little bit about Oro Mensah. And, Nate, always good to talk to you, man. Bruce, like I said, hopefully I can talk to you again soon, man. I always appreciate you guys taking my call.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate you calling in.
Let me set up that finish real quick, Nate.
Yeah, do it up.
For Sean. So when they had their match a few weeks ago, Grayson Waller raked the right eye of Apollo Crews twice during the match, one early in the match, and the second time when Crews went for his finisher, which allowed Waller to hit his and then win the match. So that the blood coming from the eye is supposed to be some kind of indication or a callback to the eye being scratched during their match four weeks ago. I don't remember how long ago it was, but
I'm glad you remembered that because, man, I was like, what the hell is the blood all
about? I covered that match that night, so that was my night for the live report. That's why I remember.
All right, no, fair enough. Because yeah,
it's the only reason I remember.
Now that you say it, I remember it, but like I've been kind of like, what the hell was that all about? You know, like,
well, I missed the eye rake during the finish of that match, and so a reader pointed it out, and that's the only reason I remember specifically about the eye scratch during the finisher. So
fair enough. But yeah, I think Grayson Waller, I'm actually kind of surprised he's not on the main roster yet. He's a phenomenal heel. I feel like he hasn't been on TV nearly as much as he was like a few months ago. But still, I mean, he's a phenomenal talent. He's amazing in the ring. His mic work and his heel work is great. Again, you could pluck him, you know, just like with Carmelo Hayes, I feel like you could just pluck him right out of NXT, put him on the main roster and you'd have a good heel right off the bat. He'd need a good story, I think, because I don't think a lot of people that would be watching the main roster really know who he is, Grayson Waller is. He'd need a good story to come in and show off those heelish chops. But with Triple H in charge, I'm pretty sure he'd be able to make that happen and do it in a way that would be meaningful for Waller. This match I thought was great. Oro Mensah, I don't know much about him either. He's been, according to cagematch.net, he's been wrestling since like 2012. He's been with WWE since 2019. He was wrestling as Oliver Carter for a long time. This, I believe, is his first match under the Oro Mensah name. But he's been, you know, wrestling in the UK for a while now. He's, but yeah, that's really all I kind of know about him. Just kind of
quickly what I've been looking up here. So I can't really speak to that too much, but I was really impressed with what we saw. He pulled off like a really cool looking Pele kick towards the end of the match. I really just his overall vibe, his energy, his moveset. I really like, I kind of want to see some more character work, character development out of him. Obviously this is the first time he showed up on NXT. So it's not like you're going to get everything right on the first, the first debut. But I'd like to find out a little bit more about him. I think it's cool he's from Ghana. I think as far as I'm aware, Kofi is the only other one that has ever wrestled from Ghana in WWE anyway. So I think that's definitely kind of cool. You know, to have the second person from Ghana to wrestle for the company is pretty cool. But yeah, overall, like I thought this was a good match. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the Oro Mensah brings in the future. Bruce.
It was a good match. Nothing spectacular. It was better to me than the two match with Cora Jade. Let me see here. Let me get to my report real quick just to make sure I can get my thoughts. The former Oliver Carter. I was watching UK when he debuted, and they immediately put him on a team with Ashton Smith, I believe was his name. And you could tell immediately when Carter debuted, and now Oro Mensah, that he just had a lot more charisma and character and personality to him. And it's not surprising that I believe Smith is gone and Carter's still here. Mensah, I should say. I thought he did fine in the backstage interview with the former Quinn McKay, what was her name tonight? Kelly Kincaid, the former Quinn McKay. I can't remember if she's been on screen before or not, but for me, this is the first time I can remember seeing her on screen.
The name Kelly Kincaid rang a bell, so I want to say she has been, but you might be right.
Who knows? I think he did fine, and I liked how he explained. I think it was a bit uncouth for her to ask about his name, but I think he responded well in terms of explaining what his name means and how he's going to, what his kind of character is and how he's going to be.
They've been doing that though. Like I remember them asking Odyssey Jones why he chose Odyssey Jones. And I know there've been a couple others as well. Like during the debut, like interview, they asked why they chose the name, which I don't really like either, but it's definitely not the first time I did it.
I guess my question will be is, How many of those questions are going towards white wrestlers and how many aren't? And so that's to me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's me where I feel like it's usually only asked towards the wrestlers of color, but especially the black wrestlers. But I could be missing some, and that's just my perspective. But I think that I don't know if they asked Katana Chance about it, but I remember Katana Chance specifically talking about why she changed her name on screen. Again, I don't remember if she was asked about it, but I do remember her bringing it up. I think the first time she was on screen as Katana Chance in the back. So there is that, but I think for the most part, it's usually towards the wrestlers who aren't white and for the most part who aren't men. But that's a different discussion. The match itself, yeah, it's what you normally expect from a Grayson Waller match. He's going to get his heel spot, then he's going to do his taunting. He's going to try and get all the heat on him, which is what a good heel should do. But the ending was, and I think this was a theme if you look at last night's Raw, distraction endings are just a thing in WWE. It seems like the playbook is more distraction ending than distraction ending being kind of the trick play. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's not good. Although tonight there weren't as many distraction endings, I will say. You know, I think Cora Jade, that match was clean. The Chase U tag team match, that was clean. The main event, that was clean. I think all matches were clean except for this match. So that's good. But I don't know if the distraction was necessary to continue the feud. I think he could have had Mensah still go over, and while Waller is complaining, have Cruz appear and freak him out. But I guess by having a interference that cuts down on some time, and it just falls in line with what they do. And it's one of those little things that just are irritating, because it's not difficult to get rid of it and to just tweak it to where it works. But it's frustrating because of how stubborn they are that they keep doing it over and over, regardless of how many times they're criticized for doing the same thing.
All right. So with that, let's go to the last call of the night. area code 814. All right, it looks like you've been brought on. So I think this is Ryan.
Yeah, this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
All right, that's what I thought. Ryan, what do you got for us tonight?
My first question is on Tyler Bate and his loss to J.D. McDonough. Since it was a clean loss, and I think he looks a little bit heelish in his sunglasses when they first showed him a little ways before the match, do you think he could possibly join Gallus as a heel turn possibly, or get a character makeover? Because sometimes when they lose clean these baby faces, they change into a different character.
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. I don't know if I necessarily want to see him join Gallus. I kind of like Gallus the way it is, with the coffees and
I wanted to shadow Gallus too.
Yeah, and I wanted to call him Wardlow. Wow, that Wolfgang.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, duh. So, but yeah, I kind of like. I very rarely, very rarely. I don't know how Wardlow almost came out there. But yeah, so, you know, I kind of like Gallus the way it is. I don't know if I'd necessarily want to see Tyler Bate join Gallus unless there was some really cool story behind it. But I think Bruce is right. I think he would overshadow everybody else in Gallus. He's the most popular person. He'd instantly be the most popular person in the stable.
Which is funny because he's also the smallest person, so
right.
Overshadow them, yeah.
It is kind of, yeah, it is kind of funny. Almost like Mustafa Ali in Retribution, if not that I want to talk about Retribution. I don't know, like, you know, because I was kind of thinking about this too. I mean, since Tyler Bates come back to NXT, I mean, this is his second loss now, to which I thought was kind of interesting. It's, I feel like he can, you know, he can still come back from it. He's very decorated within NXT UK and all of that. He's clearly loved by the fans. I don't think he's going to lose much by losing this match, but it is going to be interesting to see how they build him back up. I mean, a heel turn could come, shaving off those golden locks might help in terms of a heel turn or something. But I don't know. I just don't feel it. I could be wrong. But, like, it just, I don't know, my gut tells me right now it's not going to be any sort of, like, a heel turn or any major change for Tyler Bate. There might just be some sort of, like, a redemption story to kind of where he's been losing or something. Yeah, it might do something like that, almost like what Wes Lee did. I don't see any major heel turn, at least that kind of screams out at me. What do you think, Bruce?
If Tyler Bate's gone turn heel, I think he needs to do it by himself. I think any group he would be in would just be overshadowed by him, especially Gallus. And I hadn't watched UK for the last couple of years, but when I was watching and everything I remember from NXT even after I stopped, or UK after I stopped watching, was Gallus and Bate have, and especially when they were Mustache Mountain, they've always had adversarial relationships. So I don't know why he'd want to join them. Even though it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend or whatever. You could do all that, but I don't think it works here. And I do think if you're going to have him go heel, there is one easy way to do that. And I think this also leads me to my next point, but the easy way to do that is for him to stop dressing like a 1800s Franciscan monk and to start dressing like Seth Rollins. And that's, I think, what his role actually is right now in NXT, is he's the Seth Rollins of NXT. He's the wrestler you know who's always going to give you good matches, give you good promos, always perform well, always be near the top of the card, but isn't going to necessarily be the champion. He's going to be in the title picture, but, I mean, if you look at Seth Rollins, this whole year he's been putting over Cody, he just put over Riddle. He's going to be putting over basically a lot of people on the way to a redemption story sometime down the line. And I think it's setting up for him to be a huge babyface. With Bate, you could do a heel turn with him possibly losing, getting frustrated, but like with Lee, I think the money is, like what they had with Sami Zayn, is the journey with Bate, and you go on the journey with him. He has such a connection with the crowd. His style is very friendly, even for those who, because he can work a faster pace match, he can work a match style, a submission style, and he can work a strong style. And I think that hits a wide section of the wrestling audience's taste. And for him, to me, what that says is if that heel turn does come, it's going to be that much more effective if done well because of how much the crowd, the audience, the viewers feel a connection to him as a face. So I wouldn't advocate for it unless there is a lockdown solid story for him to turn heel, kind of like, even though this was the night of, but like Kevin Owens immediately turning on Sami Zayn and setting up who his character would be, you need to have some kind of moment like that. Not Dominic Mysterio turning on his dad, not even Damon Kemp turning on the Creed. You need a more impact turn heel. So those are my thoughts on him as a heel, but I think it's best to look at him as the Seth Rollins of NXT. I think if you look at it that way, it makes a lot more sense as to his position and why he keeps losing.
I really like that comparison, Seth Rollins of NXT. I think that's a pretty good comparison for that, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ryan, any follow-up or another point for us?
Another question I have is on this Kelly Kincaid correspondent backstage. You know, she's been training as a wrestler, because I know the local federation a couple hours up the road, she wrestled for PWX, and now she was in Ring of Honor for a good while wrestling, I believe, Mandy Leon and her stable of wrestlers, and she's been on level up as a correspondent but not a wrestler, so I just wondered if you knew if she's been doing anything else besides announcing for them.
I don't honestly know. Tom might, we could check in with Tom. Maybe he could say something on Bonus Point or something like that about it. But, I don't know if she's been, you know, I know she's wrestled in the past. But as far as, you know, and I know for Ring of Honor, she was announcer for them for a while. But as far as an NXT, I don't know if she's been training to be a wrestler. It would not surprise me in the slightest if she was, and also doing the, you know, announcing kind of on the side. But yeah, I don't know for sure. Anything would just be speculation at least out of my lips anyway. Bruce, any idea?
So if I remember correctly, when she signed with NXT, it was to be an announcer. I think she indicated that that's what she wanted to do. It kind of reminds me of when ref Aja Smith signed with NXT. People were wondering why she signed as a referee and not as a talent or not as a wrestler, and she said it because she wanted to be referee. So I think this is one of those situations. Yeah, she was in Ring of Honor. I think while she did announce in Ring of Honor too, but like Brian was saying, she trained and she wrestled. I don't know. I can't say if she's training now. I haven't looked into that much. But if I remember correctly, she wanted to be a backstage announcer, interviewer type of person. So I think this is right in line with her career goals at the time. So if that's the case, good for her. If she wants to wrestle, she's in the perfect place to do both and to learn. So we have seen in the past that not everybody can do both or can take to both as well. You know, Brandi Rhodes trained while she also announced, and as we saw in AEW, she just never took to it as well. Josh Matthews tried, and he had to stick with announcing because he just wasn't, you know, he was on Tough Enough. And
oh, yeah, he was, you know, wasn't he?
I mean, he's not a good announcer either, but he found at least a role for himself in wrestling as an announcer. So there are those people that do try both, but if she wants to be an announcer and stick with that, good for her. And if not, then she still has an opportunity there to definitely train and keep training and keep learning. And the PC is there for her. The weight room is there for her. The promo classes are there for her. I think if she does end up deciding to want to wrestle again, she's in the perfect spot to do that while she still does her announcing gig.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Because, I mean, yeah, I mean, even like, you know, in Brandi Rhodes, when she was down at NXT, I mean, she was training. She was training to be a wrestler as well as an announcer, you know, in-ring announcer, backstage announcer, and whatnot. So it's not unheard of. So like I said, it really would not surprise me if she already has been training for, you know, to be a wrestler, or, you know, if it was something she wanted to do, that, you know, should be able to slide into that role, no problem. So. Any follow-up on that or anything else for us, Ryan?
I have another topic. It's on the Axiom character. I thought Wade Barrett said something very interesting during the announcing. He knew that Axiom was 25 years old, and his gimmick is he's a superhero, and his identity should be secrets. Is there like a storyline where maybe Wade Barrett knows the identity of Axiom as a kid somehow?
I think it's an open secret.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. But because he did, you know, he mentioned the ages, because I didn't realize Nathan Frazier was only 24. I thought he was a little bit older than that. He looks a little bit older than that.
Well, they also mentioned their history, their familiarity with each other. Like, how would you know that if?
Right.
Because I think it's an open secret kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of, you know, I thought that was kind of funny too, because they kept talking about how well these two know each other and all that. And I'm thinking to myself, didn't Axiom just debut? Didn't the whole impetus for this best of three come because Nathan Frazier was talking about Axiom, about how Axiom missed everything in NXT UK? Like, that's – and he wanted to get it a little bit of taste of what NXT UK was like. That's what the whole – yeah, and that's what the whole basis of this best of three was. So just to then bring up, oh, these two know each other so well, like, I don't know. It was a little weird. If I had to guess, I mean – This is a stretch, but I mean, you know, kayfabe, right? If you're going to be a wrestler, you know, you've got to, you know, as with any company, you've got to disclose who you are and your social security and, you know, your date of birth and everything. So, I mean, I guess when you sign up to be a wrestler, you give all that information and it goes in a database and then the announce team can look at it. That's my headcanon anyway. The way that they're making it sound, it kind of does seem like it's an open secret that Axiom is a kid or something along those lines. Bruce, anything else?
Let's play out Ryan's scenario here. If they could be dropping things just in case the Axiom character doesn't work out, and maybe Wade Barrett is the heel guy in all those superhero movies who's threatened to reveal who Axiom is, if they don't do certain things, yada, yada, yada. And because of that,
I would love that.
Axiom himself ends up being the one to unmask, kind of like Mysterion in South Park. And everyone's like, oh, I knew it was that kid. And Mr. Garrett's like, oh, to think Mysterion was a kid in my class. And like, they all look the damn same. We don't know who it is. But that's a different story, right? That's the scenario I see where that could happen. But to me, I think that there's also a second scenario where these sorts of lines are being dropped by Barrett because they're setting up for an Axiom heel turn where Barrett is kind of his unofficial official spokesman. Like they're never seen on screen together, but during the matches, Wade Barrett always has some insight from Axiom or something. That could be something that goes on later. Regardless of where it goes, I will say what I like tonight about Axiom is his gear. It wasn't the black and gold he usually comes out in. It was a very nice, distinctive red and gold. It almost reminded me of a cross between, like, Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik and what they used to wear.
Yeah,
so,
actually.
It looked really good. And I think the mask tonight, it seemed like with the black and gold mask he had been using in the past times he had been wrestling, that he was adjusting it a lot more. I didn't notice that as much tonight. So I think they must have found a good compensation between the fabric, the material, and breathability. Another thing to keep an eye out on. But, yeah, I think the most likely scenario for Gonna Follow Ryan is that it's some kind of unmasking scenario that is spurred by a heel Barrett as the announcer threatening to expose all of the secrets.
I would love to see like almost shades of Bad News Barrett or something like that. Like try to expose Axiom.
Bad News Axiom.
Yeah. You know, that'd be hilarious. Like I don't want to see announcers get involved in storylines all the time, but every once in a while. And when it's with the right person, with Corey Graves would get involved with some things. Cause he knew some backstage information, knew a guy or whatever. Like I really like that. I think that's kind of cool, and it just adds a little something to the character and the announcer too. But they got to do it. You got to do it in the right way, because then it kind of also takes away some of the credibility from the announcer. It has to be the color guy. But
and in the kayfabe perspective, even when so you as a wrestler, unless you have the mic in your hand, that's the only time people are going to hear from you. The
right.
ring the commentators, even after your match, they could still be brought up. Like you hear Barrett bring up other stuff that happened throughout the night or different nights
all the time
throughout the show. So if you're a heel wanting to get a certain message out, what better way than to turn an announcer on your side? So again, the other example of Erickson turning heel and losing Barrett, I think, is also plausible. I think both are unlikely, but I think the fact that we're discussing them as possibilities is a good sign for NXT.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Ryan, any follow-up, or I'll give you one more. I think I gave you four, but that's okay. I'll give you one more if you got it.
This is the fourth one. I've been counting. Sanga, you think he's in danger of getting released since he lost to Von Wagner? I know it was a little bit of a screw draw with Mr. Stone getting involved, but I was still a little bit surprised how quickly, you know, Von Wagner won the match.
I don't think Sango's really on the verge of getting released. I mean, I think Von Wagner was the one there was the right one to win the match just because of the way that Von Wagner's been being pushed for the past year or so. So I think he was the right one to win the match. Sanga is, you know, I like Sanga. I like what he can do in the ring. He's still green, but from what he's shown us, you know, the last couple times he's been in the ring, like I've been somewhat impressed. Backstage, you know, he shows he's kind of versatile with, you know, being a bit of a comedic character, but also being at times being a serious character. I think that the WWE environment would be a perfect place for Sanga. If Vince was still around, I think it'd be a perfect character for Vince to kind of play around with on the main roster, some sort of, you know, monster heel, or maybe start as a... If not, yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, maybe start as a monster heel and wind up like the Great Khali or something like that. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Sanga as time goes on. But I don't think that this was anything more than just building Von Wagner up a bit more. You know, we don't see him super, super often. And when we do see him, it's kind of, I don't say squash or anything like that, but mostly a squash. Then, you know, now we kind of, you know, two big guys going at it. And I mean, the match itself wasn't great. It was probably the worst match of the night, as far as I'm concerned. It was pretty slow and plodding. And, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, you know, two monsters, like on paper, two giant monsters getting in the ring and fighting, like, sounds great. But a lot of times you just get a plodding clunker. And I wouldn't say it was like a super clunker. I did write in the hits and misses. I thought it was a clunker, but it's like, looking back on it, I wouldn't say it was like a super clunky match, but it still clearly showed that both Sanga and Von Wagner have some work to do in the ring still. But it is developmental, so they're in the right spot. But yeah, overall, I think Von Wagner was the right choice here based on the way they've been pushing him over the past, you know, year. And Sanga's lower on the card than Von Wagner. I would have been very surprised if Sanga won. And I would have thought, you know, if he did win, that there would have been a push coming for him. But I mean, Von Wagner, as far as I know, is undefeated right now, as far as I can remember. So it kind of makes sense. That's the way that this went. Bruce.
I'm fairly certain Wagner's lost at least one or two matches. I can't remember to who in the past few months, but a different story. So I don't think Sanga's in danger of getting cut. I think he's in the exact spot where he needs to be for his level and his presentation. So if I'm just comparing these two together, the opponents, right? I think Wagner is much closer to his ceiling, while Sanga still has a lot more potential to fill. And when I look at it in that regard, I don't see why WWE would let him go. He just has too much to offer. When I look at Sanga, yes, he is still very green in the ring, but he just started not too long ago. And not everyone picks up at the same pace as Kurt Angle or whatnot or Tiffany Stratton. But so tonight's match, I think Von Wagner as his opponent definitely didn't help. You could see when they were trying to set up their spots, especially the last part where Wagner was trying to get him up for his finisher. But you could definitely tell that they were trying to get that spot just right. But the thing with Sanga is that when you look at him, he has a lot of charisma. He has a presence to him. I guess the best way to put it is he is comfortable on the mic. He doesn't seem intimidated when he has to give a promo either up front or in the back. there's definitely a lot that they could do with him because of his size and his power, but he also has that, even when he's trying to act more heelish, there's something endearing about him and his presence. And I think that was shown a bit in those backstage vignettes or the videos with him and Casey Carter or Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro, Katana Chance, I guess now. And how he always and then with Ulyssa Leon and Valentina Ferois, and how he's encouraging them, and last week about how they set this match up. I think all those qualities lead me to believe that they're going to be patient with him. He has more of all the things I'd want in a wrestler than Omos does, and we see how much time and TV time and how much of, you know, how many prominent matches he's been in the last year or so. I think Sanga's going to be fine. I'm more confident in his development than I am in certain someone like Von Wagner.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree. I mean, Von Wagner has been with the company now since 2019. He wrestled as Cal Bloom for quite a while, not necessarily on TV, mostly dark matches. Anytime he showed up on TV, he was like security or something like that. But the fact that he's been wrestling for as long as he has been now, and you know, he hasn't really seemed to improve much, I'd say in the last like 6 months or so. Like, I kind of feel like you're right. He's probably at his ceiling for where he's going to be technically in the ring. Yeah, obviously, I mean, with time, he'll still improve. But, you know, I think Sanga does have a bit of a higher ceiling. And I feel like he can, like, I just feel like he's a little bit more crisp in the ring. He's still green, but like, I like what Sanga brings to the table, you know, with his moveset a little bit better than Von Wagner. I guess that's a better way of putting it. Not necessarily crispness, but I just like what, you know, what Sanga brings a little bit better.
I just thought of the perfect comparison for Von Wagner. He is 2.0's version of Aaliyah. Like, they've been there for so long. And there's been no discernible improvement. There's been marginal improvement, but they still got their jobs. You know, good for them, I guess. And Aaliyah has a championship reign in her belt as a tag team champion, even if it was just for a week or two, but she got it. So
yeah, that's true.
For her.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like that comparison too. I like that. You're on a roll with the comparisons tonight.
Hey, look at me.
Yeah, right. Ryan, thank you very much as always, man. Any follow-up for us there?
Well, I will say Von Wagner was on a pretty impressive losing streak to winning that match, according to CageMatch.com. And I'm not
I just went back myself and looked at him. I'm like, all right, I was wrong. He did have a few losses there, but just a few.
And that was
all right, Ryan.
With the one comment. I think Aaliyah has proved pretty good since the main roster, but that's just me. I'm just a fan of what she brings to the table.
I mean, if you've been here for, what, 8-7 years or whatnot, there should be more improvement than what she's showing. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I hear you. So, all right, Ryan, thank you very much, man. We appreciate it. Let us move on to, you know what, let's actually go to the email segment here and touch on those. Unfortunately, I closed my tab, so I'm going to fill time by just randomly talking about me closing my tab. We're going to start with, we actually have two emails from JB, as we usually do. So we'll start with, hi team, it's JB from Detroit. I'm of the opinion that the Baker-Hater storyline has dragged out far too long at this point. I understand they're going for a Wardlow MJF story, but it's never had quite the same heat, in my opinion. Also, is the fact that the women's title being defended in a four-way on two consecutive big shows a sign that TK is getting lazy with the women's division? I feel like this email was meant for an AEW show.
It was probably meant for Mike and Andrew or something.
Yeah. So I'm okay. All right. I was confused going through all of this, but like
Hater and Baker.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. So we'll leave that one alone. Let's go to JB's second email, which is titled Pub Rules Match. He says, hi, team, it's JB from Detroit. I know everybody is not biggest fans of Gallus, but in my opinion, this feud with Briggs and Jensen is making a joke out of their serious badass act. This upcoming Pubs Rule match almost feels comical because Briggs and Jensen are now involved. Also, is this Schism versus Cameron Grimes angle giving you a poor man Daniel Bryan joins Wyatt family and revolts minus Chinese? Why did I say Chinese? It's not even in there. Hold on. Okay, so also, does the Schism versus Cameron Grimes angle give you a poor man's Daniel Bryan joins the Wyatt family and revolts Vice minus Grimes actually joining them at any point? Finally, on Braun, on commentary, it was painfully bad. It was like pulling teeth to get him to say anything, and when he did, it was never anything of actual substance. As always, love the show and go VIP. As far as Braun Breaker goes on commentary, yeah, that was painful. He is clearly a Steiner. He's got a very limited vocabulary. We'll leave it at that. He just could not really cut it on commentary tonight at all. It seemed like they were trying to get him to kind of give a little bit more, and he just did not know what to say. Like, it was comical and cringeworthy all at the same time. Schism versus Cameron Grimes, that angle, yeah, kind of sort of is a little bit reminiscent of Daniel Bryan joining the Wyatt family. There's part of me that wants to see Cameron Grimes join Schism, because I feel like there could be some cool things there. But at the same time, I really like Cameron Grimes and his, you know, the current incarnation of him, even though he hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot, of substance anyway. He's on TV here and there, but, like, he hasn't been in any major – this is really, I think, like, his first major storyline in quite a while. It might even be since, you know, the Ted DiBiase was around. No, he challenged for the title, I think. But regardless,
yeah, Nate, just stop trying to do callbacks.
Yeah, you should probably stop, because, like, I mean, I'm lucky I remember what I had for breakfast this morning, let alone what happened like 6 months ago. So it's like I wouldn't be disappointed if Grimes was to join Schism, but at the same time, I don't know if it's the right move either. This Pubs Rules match with Briggs, Jensen, and Gallus is a little weird. Like, tonight just kind of gave me some, like, APA vibes, like, just when the APA would be backstage drinking beer and playing cards. That's kind of what the whole Gallus, before Briggs and Jensen showed up, that's what it kind of reminded me of, with Gallus sitting there, you know, throwing darts, playing poker, drinking in a bar. Briggs and Jensen show up. They start, like, some verbal beef, and then security shows up and starts, like, you know, holding the two back. And I'm thinking to myself, why the hell is WWE security at a bar? Right? Like, that's just kind of weird. But, you know, is what it is. I also thought it was kind of weird that, like, they're holding them back, but, like, not at the same time. Like, you have like, four or five security guards there, and they've got, like, one hand on, like, one of them. And it just, I don't know, it was really weird. Like, they weren't really trying to hold them back. Maybe it was just the way the bar was set up. I don't know. But
well, if you actually try, then you can't have them be like, come at me, bro. Come at me, bro.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, I mean, like, normally it seems like they're trying to hold them back. Tonight it was like just – it seemed like just a half-assed, total half-assed thing.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what a pub rules match is. I'm assuming it's going to be some sort of a no DQ, you know, false count anywhere thing in a pub. But, you know, it could be something like a good housekeeping match between China and Jeff Jarrett, where they just bring a whole bunch of things that belong in a pub around the ring, and that's what you can use for a weapon. I don't know. It's weird. I kind of agree with JB. It kind of takes a little bit of that badassness away from Gallus. Briggs and Jensen, while I'm higher on them than I used to be, the feuds that they've been in and the angles they've been in just have been so lackluster and kind of comical at points where they don't feel like a major threat against somebody like Gallus, or, you know, a team like Gallus. I feel like if this was NXT UK, Gallus would just steamroll over the two of them. Granted, I guess that didn't necessarily happen because they won the titles, UK titles, but still, like, in a, you know, if this was a different world where NXT UK wasn't going away or anything, I feel like Gallus would just, like, completely decimate them. So on JB's email, our Gallus Schism and Braun Breaker on commentary.
So first with Schism, Grimes, it doesn't remind me of Wyatt family Daniel Bryan. It more reminds me of going with AEW, a connection here again. It more reminds me of early Dark Order, how they were trying to recruit and just be creepy about it, and it just wasn't working. So that's what I get from here. And I will say Cameron Grimes is promo tonight, the pre-recorded one, I wrote that, for lack of a better term, that was the most unhinged I've ever seen Cameron Grimes in NXT. He yelled a lot. I guess it was understandable. He really had a furious look on his face. So, you know, throughout his time in NXT, we haven't really seen that side of him. We've really seen more of the comedic goofy side, or the happy-go-lucky baby face, or the serious baby face, but not the fire and brimstone baby face. So I think that was a good opportunity for him to show a little more. When it comes to I just forgot. What was the second part of the email?
So there was the, I already archived it. So there was the Gala stuff.
Oh, the
there
Gala
was,
stuff. There we go. Okay.
Gala stuff, and then Bron Breakker and commentary.
Bron Breakker commentary. Nothing more needs to be said. When it comes to Gala, so by your comments, I'm guessing you missed all this stuff. So they're in the backstage, actually. That was the area where Briggs and Jensen and Henley usually sit down and have their little beer and talk about being, you know, Southerners or whatever they do. And Gallus actually took that over and were mocking them, and that's why they were so mad when they came over, because that was Briggs and Jensen's spot in the back they usually have, or they usually occupy, I guess, for lack of.
Okay,
that
makes more sense.
Yeah, so they weren't actually in a bar. They were just in an area that Briggs and Jensen turned into a little bar. The pub rules match. So I think there's one template they need to look at to make this match work and for both teams to come out looking better. And that's the barroom brawl between Sheamus and Cesaro before they formed the bar. It was the match that led to them becoming and naming themselves the bar, where they just were beating on each other, and then they decided to beat up on everybody in the bar. Do you remember that?
Yeah, they had a best of seven. Yep.
Yeah, and then they were in the bar, and they beat on each other, and then, all right, you know what? We are the bar. So I think that is the template they should use. Otherwise, I have a feeling this is going to be just too hokey, too cute,
and
Gallus, but you know, they're supposed to be a serious badass team. So for them to get dragged down into this is a bit, it does define them down a little bit. So hopefully they do things during the match, and I'm hoping they do almost like a cinematic type of match, a pre-recorded match here, that really gives them enough. For one, they should come out on top, but two, it's nothing that's. They don't come out on top due to comedy, or, you know, don't do the stadium stampede that AEW did, but do more of a, you know, not as brutal, but like Rock Mankind, empty arena, right? So, something like that, but in a bar. It needs to be a little more brutal so that the teams come out looking good. I was going to tie that to another segment from tonight, okay. So Roxanne Perez said Mako Satomura brought, She found a grit and toughness she didn't know she had, thanks to Mako Satomura. She thanked her for that. They need to have that kind of a match with the bar rules match, or the pub rules match. I think it's next week. They need to have that kind of a tough, intense physical match for both teams to come out looking okay.
All right. So let's go to Kevin Catani's email. Kevin says, "Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. With NXT 2.0 firmly in the rear view, I'm very interested to see how the next 4 to 6 weeks play out. What is a bold prediction that each of you have in that time frame? Also, I know that news just broke the other day about Survivor Series taking on the War Games Montel. Do you think NXT will play into that PLE at all, or will Hunter continue to keep things separate? Thanks as always, and go VIP, and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani." So I'm also very interested to see how the next 4 to 6 weeks play out. I'm really interested to see how next week plays out, where this, you know, as we said earlier tonight, this was a taped episode. Next week is the first one where they go back live. I'm really interested to see if there's any sort of aesthetic changes to the CWC or anything like that. I'm kind of thinking probably not, where we had some aesthetic changes tonight, like very small ones. I feel like if they were going to do any big aesthetic changes, that we would have seen like no changes at all tonight and then see everything next week. But still, I'm really interested to see what happens next week in terms of the overall presentation of the show. As far as like a bold prediction that I have in this time frame, within the next 4 to 6 weeks, A bold prediction would be that Roman Reigns comes down and wins the title from Bron Breakker and holds every title in WWE. That would be a bold prediction. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the bold prediction I'm going to go with. And then Survivor Series taking on the War Games model. I kind of think this is cool. I'm a little like, there's part of me that's like, War Games is our thing. That's an NXT thing. Why you bring that, you know, but at the same time, War Games, such a cool match. Bringing it to the main roster, I think it's kind of a cool idea. Triple H said that this is probably going to be a one and done. It's not going to be like Survivor Series, going to be War Games every year. You know, or they'll do another War Games or something. Like, this kind of going to be like the one, but, at the same time, it would not surprise me at all if this became like a match on the main roster that we saw more often. Triple H is much more apt to take ideas that were from other companies like WCW, such as War Games, and adapt them to the current product. Vince was like, "Nah, if it ain't my idea, I don't want anything to do with it," which is why we never really saw War Games on the main roster. We just sat down NXT. So I'm definitely for it. I'm looking forward to Survivor Series War Games, but at the same time, there's part of me that's like, that's our thing in NXT. And it also makes me wonder, are we even going to see a War Games match, a War Games, you know, match in NXT this year? Or is that just going to be main roster this year and maybe we'll get it back next year, you know? So that's kind of, those are my immediate thoughts there. I think Hunter will continue to keep NXT separate from the main roster. Even though he's starting to go back to NXT, like the Black and Gold era a little bit, I think the developmental aspect is going to stick around at least for the foreseeable future. And I think as long as that is the case, we're going to see more of a separation from with NXT and the main roster. That doesn't mean that, you know, we aren't going to see some more people come down from the main roster and feud with people in NXT and then maybe see those people from NXT show up on the main roster to continue that feud, which, you know, has happened here and there. But I think those are going to be kind of like the exceptions that break the rule, approve the rule, or whatever the hell however the saying goes. I think that, you know, those will still happen periodically, but I don't think we'll ever see, like, you know, Survivor Series from, what was it, 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now, where NXT was like shown as a third brand and they were involved in everything. I don't think that's in the cards, at least in the near future. Bruce, on Kevin's email.
So, bold prediction, NXT invades Raw and SmackDown and does another Nexus 3.0. A realistic bold prediction. Let's see here. A realistic bold prediction. Mandy Rose is going to lose her title at Halloween Havoc.
Ooh, I like that. Prediction. I like that.
And then when we're moving on to the next part of the question, which I already just forgot, even though we're just talking about it. God damn it.
War Games. War Games Survivor Series.
Right, so War Games. I tweeted my thoughts about this when it was announced. And first is that as long as they give me Io Sky putting herself in a trash can and jumping off the top of the cage, I'll be happy.
Yes.
So, because Triple H did indicate, at least from the reports that I read, that there would be a men's and a women's War Games match. So,
yep, I read that as well.
If that's the case, I'm assuming that Damage Control will be involved because they're the main faction of women right now who are kind of involved in every little aspect of the women's angles. So that, I think, it is going to be given meaning that Io Sky will be in there, and hopefully she does do that, both as something for the fans who haven't seen her on Raw, but also as a callback to those of us in NXT who remember those fun times of her jumping off of there with a trash can or off the In Your House set to do a crossbody on Charlotte Flair and who was it? Someone else. But yeah, and then my other tweet about War Games was that after thinking about it for a bit, I'm okay with the change for a couple of reasons. One is that for so long, Survivor Series has gone away from feuds being the reason why teams are put together to brand supremacy. And that happened even when they had bragging rights as a paper. So that was so bland, so boring. The only injection that made it even seem a little fresh was when NXT was involved, and they had the three-way tie, I think it was, between – or did NXT win? I don't remember. But they had the whole Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT thing. But it's so – Survivor Series used to be one of the main pay-per-views, and it's still considered one of the big four or big five if you count Money in the Bank. But it's lost some of its luster. What this does is removes the brand supremacy, makes it more about the actual feud because it's going to be – capped off by War Games, and you can see how they're doing it right now. The Bloodline versus pretty much everybody, right? You could even have the match be Judgment Day versus Rey Mysterio, Edge, and whoever they find, right? You could do the Bloodline, and on the women's side, you have Damage Control versus Bianca Belair, Asuka, Alexa Bliss. If they add a fourth, they haven't done a 3-on-3 War Games match. It's usually 4-on-4. So I'm assuming there will be a fourth added to each team, regardless. But it just gives it a different sense, a different feel to it. And just that alone makes me more interested in Survivor Series than if they had just gone with the normal or the traditional, the plan they've used for the last 5, 10, 15 years regarding Survivor Series. I want it to get to a point, again, where the Survivor Series matches are actually Survivor Series matches. There's more than one, but that they're built on actual feuds and rivalries instead of just thrown together or something about brand when no one cares about brand at all. The other thing, too, is not just War Games, but the Fight Pit is being brought from NXT to Raw because Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle are going to be wrestling in the Fight Pit. So you're seeing Triple H take what he knows worked in NXT and seeing if they will translate to a larger audience on Raw and SmackDown. So I hope it works. I don't know if the Fight Pit concept is going to appeal to as wide of an audience as some of the more, because at the time it worked because the NXT audience was that type of audience. I'm not quite sure if that will translate as well to the larger audience of Raw and SmackDown, but that's what these experiments are for, and hopefully they continue to prove beneficial, because I think that means we're going to see more innovation happening at NXT as the test site, just like Major League Baseball uses the minor leagues to test out all the rules changes they later implement, like the pitch clock or robot umpires and whatnot. So that's what I hope happens. But
robot umpires.
At least. The umpires are still are human, but they're being told balls and strikes by a computer or by a relay that determines the strike zone.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I haven't watched baseball. Like, baseball is like the only sport that I would actually watch, and I haven't really kept up with it in years. But that's cool. I like that. That's interesting. What the heck was I going to say? Well, before you blew my mind with the robot umpire, I had a point, and I don't remember what the hell it was. Oh, Fight Pit. It was the Fight Pit. It was the Fight Pit. So I kind of agree with you, and I was thinking that myself when I read the Fight Pit was going to be moved to the main roster or put on the main roster. Because, like, even when the Fight Pit happened, and it was it was Thatcher and Ciampa, right?
I think, wasn't it Thatcher and Riddle? Was it Ciampa? Let me look.
Oh,
it up.
Shit. Now I don't remember. Maybe now I think you're right. I think it was Riddle. Now I can't remember. But even back then, I know it was Fight Pit. Matt Riddle, Timothy Thatcher. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So even back then, like, I was wondering if it was going to work, because all I could think of was the Lion's Den match between Owen Hart and Ken Shamrock and how it sort of worked, but it really didn't work at the same time. And I was kind of curious to see how it would work. And I mean, Thatcher and Riddle, like, I mean, that was a phenomenal match, absolutely phenomenal match. I think if anybody could make it work on the main roster, Seth Rollins can easy. And I mean, him working with Riddle, especially where Riddle's already worked the Fight Pit match. I think it could work. It could definitely work. It's going to be it's a gamble though, because I think you're right. I think that, the crowd may not necessarily be into more of like an MMA style match. And it might be more into like wrestling, but we'll see. We'll see. I thought the Fight Pit was a great concept, a great idea, and it was executed super well down in NXT. So I'm curious to see how it works. Curious to see how this, Those whole thing, the whole thing works
it
out.
It also looks like Thatcher and Champ had the second fight pit match. The first one was Riddle and Thatcher, and I think using Riddle as the medium to introduce it to Raw and SmackDown audiences is smart because he has that connection, and they could show footage of him. As they're hyping the match, they could show footage of him in there and what happened in that match. Even though he lost, it was a great match and it was brutal. And he, you know, him doing the floating bro off the top platform and whatnot, those are the shots they can show to hype the match and get viewers interested in what the match is going to be.
It's so weird that I just brought up the Lion's Den match, because as I was looking up to see who was
that
in that fight pit match. Well, no, I know that, but it's weird that I brought it up, because as I was looking it up to see who was in that match, Riddle, you know, for Riddle and Thatcher, a headline came up from another website. Ken Shamrock wants to take a role in the Extreme Rules Fight Pit match.
I mean, so, look, that was based on his Lion's Den and what they did. So it makes sense that he wanted to be involved, and he does have a connection to WWE, not just in that Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar way, in the Dan Severn way, where they went to pro wrestlers as legitimate fighters who had that, I guess, to be redundant, that sense of legitimacy to them, that what they did in the ring, you had a sense that they were really trying to hurt you. So he'd be a good person. They had Kurt Angle as a special ref for one of the matches. I think it was the Thatcher and a Riddle match. But I don't know if they've announced if there's going to be a special guest ref or just one of the usual refs, but it could be an interesting time to bring someone in who has a connection to both through NXT, whether that's someone like Matt Bloom or one of the other producers or coaches, or even Adam Pearce. So I'm going to be interested to see what they do with the officiating, because it's not a match that the only rule basically is to get a pinfall or submission. So that's all they're going to be there for. But generally, I think there's going to be at least one ref bump during the match. So we'll see how they go about and laying it out, who's officiating.
All right. So we've got a few other things to talk about, and we're already coming up on the 2-hour mark here. So let's, we haven't talked about Dyad versus Inoue and Blade, and we got a bunch of other things to talk about too. Do you have, do you have anything to really say about Dyad versus Inoue and Blade? It's like, I really can't think of much to talk about with that.
Inoue definitely is just oozes potential. Malik Blade still seems a bit like he's
timid,
a step behind. That's a good way to put it, timid, because it seems like he's still thinking through things.
Yeah.
I kept noting that he kept on his Burgundy vest, joining Rich Fan and the Burgundy Vest Club, and it ended up actually playing to their detriment, because it was used to distract him and get him basically beat on a bit by the Dyad. I don't like the group. I don't really like Gacy. But I do appreciate the fact that we're seeing the Dyad in matches and on TV week in and week out. And what they did tonight, I think, is a good template in how they should move forward. They're doing more stuff they did as Grizzled Young Veterans in terms of their moveset and how they act in the ring. And I think that's going to do more to get us to, if not accept, at least tolerate Schism. Than just trying to tell us to like them or to accept them. So, that they're probably going to have to rename their finisher. I noticed that Joseph said Ticket 2, and then he didn't say Mayhem, so it used to be, but, been on Inoue. He's definitely someone I've been hyping for a long time. There's just so much there. I'm just reminded so much of the potential we all saw in Montez Ford when he first came to NXT. Like it's all there, and there is no lack of confidence or charisma or anything with Inoue, and that's going to take him far as long as he doesn't. There are many stories of wrestlers who just their ego got too big for them. I hope that, I don't want him to pull a Daniel Puter kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So he definitely has all the potential in the world. And I don't want to say he's being held down by Malik Blade, but I think Malik Blade is lagging behind a bit on the development.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. I think, I really like the comparison to Montez Ford. I really do. It's very, and I didn't put it together myself, but now that you say it, it's very clear. I mean, very similar style. The charisma is off the charts. You know, and Malik Blade, I don't think he's a bad talent by any stretch, but his gimmick, I think, is also kind of keeping him back a little bit, because his gimmick is, you know, to be like that timid geek. And I don't know if that's what he's trying to pull off in the ring, is just trying to play to that gimmick, or if he is really trying to have, if he has to like think everything through or think some things through while he's in the ring. So I don't know, but I would agree with you. I wouldn't say that he would be, that Blade is holding him back, but I definitely think that he's certainly a step behind. Malik Blade, or Idris Onofe is definitely the Shawn Michaels of the group.
Yes.
For sure. So we've got, let's see, we kind of touched on the Alba Fyre video package for Mandy Rose. We've got the stuff with Damon Kemp, as well as Julius and Brutus deciding on Brutus being the one to take Damon Kemp on next week. We had Quincy Elliott. It was a recap of his debut. Gallus, Wesley's cleared for action. And he's going to be in the North American qualifier match.
Taking this freaking bye.
Instead of taking the bye against Tony D'Angelo. And then we also had a vignette for an introduction for Sol Ruka. Anything stand out there that you want to bring up?
So the Sol Ruka thing is interesting because I'm fairly certain that she was supposed to debut either last week or 2 weeks ago, and then they aired another vignette, and then another vignette tonight that says she's debuting next week. So I wrote, she's debuting next week, or so they say, because this is not the first time they've pushed back her debut.
Is she going to be the next Veer Mahan?
Either that or Melina, I think, took like a year and a half or something like that to debut.
Oh, God, yeah.
Not that long, but she took a long time. When it comes to the Damon Kemp thing, what I appreciate here is they showed the security footage that Strong found was going to show the Creed brothers, which you know, they had the foresight to record him and the D'Angelo brothers in a segment with the money, and then showing that he was the one trying to signal D'Angelo about winning the title, the tag team titles, and it wasn't Roderick Strong. And it gave him a reason to take out Strong, and that's, you know, Strong found the video, so I need to take him out before he showed them the video. So I like how they patched up some of the holes in the story here, using Kemp as the medium. I think, you know, this video promo was better than last week's, but he still has a long way to go there. But the thing that I see here that gives me hope is he doesn't seem like he's intimidated to talk on the mic, even if his charisma isn't necessarily there at this point. So that's a good factor for him. I think that what's going to happen is, you know, Brutus is going to lose. I think Kemp might do something underhanded. And then before he gets to Julius, Roderick Strong is going to come back and demand a match. Strong is going to put over, I think, clean for that one. And then the ultimate match against Julius is where he loses, but after the match gets the last laugh by taking out Julius and the rest of Diamond Mine, and then you know, beginning a full-fledged heel run, as he might not be a huge dude, but he is a strong dude who's just going to throw fools around the ring. So they could mold him into like a Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Chad Gable mold, and just have him throw fools around the ring as a heel, and I think that would go a long way towards establishing him as someone who is vindictive and aggressive enough to have done that to Diamond Mine and Roderick Strong specifically. So I think they're on the right track there. Let's see, what else am I missing? I talked about the Sodomura and Perez video. It was a good video. I think they hit the right notes of Roxanne Perez again, talking about what she learned and how she needed to learn that from Sodomura. I think it was also a good tip of the cap by showing the bruises on her. Whether or not they've lasted 2 weeks or just a week, it was a nice shot because it looked pretty brutal. What else did you bring up that I'm missing? I don't
know. Let's see.
We talked about that.
We talked about that. I brought up the Quincy Elliott recap.
Oh,
from his
there
debut.
We go. Quincy. So they're calling his bonsai drop the Diva drop. So what we have seen since Triple H took over is they are naming, or they're at least naming moves as they happen a little more. And as we saw tonight, we're getting names, new names for moves that haven't had names yet, such as the Diva drop from Quincy Elliott or the Golden Ratio for Axiom. So that's something to keep an eye on, but also remember, Vic Joseph never gets moves right. He always says something wrong. So he keeps calling it the devil inside when you're supposed to say it to where it sounds like that, but it's devil inside. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and he always said, moon over my moonsaults or whatever. Yeah, just don't listen to Vic, listen to Wade and whatnot, but be aware that they're naming moves more and more. So keep an eye on that.
All right. So, yeah, I think that covers just about everything on the show tonight. And if it didn't, well, tough. My name's Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which you can find up on pwtorch.com each and every Tuesday shortly before this show goes on the air. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Haywood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I am one of the live reporters with Kelly Wells. I did the report tonight, so you can see that up. I have been lucky in that while I do have to do Axiom versus Nathan Fraser matches, I've been missing the last few Nikita Lyons matches. Those have fallen on Kelly, so I'm thankful for that. I also will probably have some news next week once things are officially signed and I'm not leaving, nothing like that, but just some things happening for me that are good that I might be able to drop next week. I'm just waiting for things to be official. And, yeah, next week, Kelly should be back, and we should have all three of us here.
All right, guys. So with that, we will talk to you next week. Take care.